this is the Past Lives Podcast, episode 189, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My mission here at the Past Lives Podcast is to investigate evidence that demonstrates survival of the human soul. We will look at past life memories, near-death experiences, spirit communication, and other incredible phenomena. And this is the free one-hour version of the episode. The extended episode is an hour and 22 minutes, and to get access to the extra 22 minutes, and the other extended versions of the episodes, you can join the Past Lives Podcast Patreon campaign. When you sign up for $5 a month, you get an extended episode every week. And for $2 a month, you get an extended episode every month. And there are now 33 extended episodes available to the $5 patrons. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/Past Lives Podcast, or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. And also, when you book a past life regression hypnosis session with me, and you're a patron, you get a 25% discount. And I'm offering a free consultation call, which can be booked on my website. The links are in the show notes, and you can find the show notes for this and every other episode at my website. My Instagram is the Past Lives Podcast with an underscore between each word, and on Twitter I'm at Simon G. Bowne. And there is a Past Lives Podcast Facebook group, and if you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. So this week I'm talking to Paul Orand about his book, Essential Healing, Hypnotherapy and Regression-Based Practices to Release the Emotional Pain and Trauma Keeping You Stuck. Paul is an award-winning master hypnotherapist who has worked in the field for more than 30 years. He had a transformative near-death experience when he was struck by lightning. Paul served as the first elective president of the Michael Newton Institute and now serves as its director of education and lead trainer. He's been featured in documentary films and on television for his work with the groundbreaking Life Between Lives regression therapy. Hi, Paul. Thanks a lot for coming onto the podcast.
It's a real pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I invited you on because I saw your book, Essential Healing, which is really interesting, but also because you've got so much experience with past life regression and life between lives. But first of all, if we talk about your book, Essential Healing, could you give us an overview and tell us about it?
Sure. It's really a culmination of about 30 or 35 years in the field. And over time, of course, I had my own growth and evolution and transformations. And I saw that individuals that I was working with also had some, well, kind of a series, if you would, of major transformations, not necessarily in some specific order, but some major milestones in the work that we were doing. And so I did my best to put those all together into the book. So I called it Essential Healing because my feeling is that many of these healing processes are essential for each of us in one way or another. And as much as I do therapy and on a daily basis with individual clients and in groups as well, I'm a really big fan of doing my own work of self-therapy and not being completely dependent on someone else to facilitate for me. And so I took a lot of the processes that I found myself using repeatedly with individuals and put them as practices into the book so that someone can do a lot of these practices for themselves rather than being dependent on someone else to do it for them.
That's one of the things I like about the book, is because you give all the detail about all these things that can help you and the different chapters, but then you also write it out like you actually teach people, almost like a textbook. You follow this, you do exactly this, and you can get into this, what I've talked about in this chapter.
Yeah, and that's something I really love putting out there, is making it as possible for people to do this on their own. And, I mean, the practices are meant to be used repeatedly. Everyone makes progress at their own pace. And sometimes, you know, on that journey within, ultimately I want to see people reconnect with their authentic self, their what I call soul essence, that core self. But there are often various layers or roadblocks or different beliefs, stored emotions that stand in the way. And well, the idea is to keep making that journey repeatedly, breaking through those layers until ultimately reaching that core self. And something I saw or have seen many times is once we make contact with that authentic self, that core self, and invoke or invite it forward, it will do a lot of the healing from within. So I think a lot of healing practices work from outside in. And my idea with this was really to work from inside out.
And in the book, you talk about the day you turned 40 and you were sitting on a beach meditating and you had some kind of amazing experience. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that was really something that was more or less spontaneous. I was sitting meditating at sunrise, which for me is a really open and beautiful time. And I had this spontaneous experience of moving out of my mental mind and diving deep within myself. And so that's the pattern or the structure I gave to the book. And there I saw, if you would, or because we're not all visual, but saw or experienced or sensed within me, this little flame, much like a pilot light on a gas stove. And as I observed this inner flame, it began to grow. And it became bigger and bigger and brighter and until it was more like a roaring bonfire where it invited me into it. First, that prospect seemed a little bit scary, but I went in. And it felt like it really burned away a lot of, well, things I'd come to believe of myself that were limiting, some of the stored emotions that were hindering me. It freed me in some way and really expanded my consciousness until I felt like not only was I enveloped in this inner flame, but perceived myself or experienced myself as that flame, in a way dancing, actually, you know, like a candle flame can dance when it's big enough. There was a kind of movement like that within me that actually lasted for days. And I made a lot of effort to get back to that state and didn't find it so easy to re-achieve. But it was something that made me aware that within me, you know, whatever my self-limiting beliefs about myself or whatever my wounds of my ego or from life are, I felt and experienced something within me that was much more pure and powerful that I began to explore how could I access that and live from that more easily. And well, that's was one of the big intentions behind writing Essential Healing.
So in the book, you talk about the nine layers. When you work through all these nine layers, does it take a set amount of time? Is it different for everybody? And do you recommend that people spend a certain amount of time on it every day?
You know, people have such busy and sometimes chaotic lives, especially these last couple of years with all that's been going on in our world. I don't want to contribute to adding more stress, but yes, I think that everyone needs to make their own doable schedule. And so I think that using these frequently is really helpful. Someone who will do them on a regular or a daily basis will find that they make much more rapid progress. Someone starting out may dive through many of the layers and then bump into something and then spend some time there. So not everyone needs to spend the same amount of time on each of these steps or layers. And once you've done them and cleared them, doesn't mean that you'll never run into another layer back there. You might well, or something will trigger you. But at least once you've made contact with that core self, you know it's there and it's doing its work from from inside out. So it makes it much, much easier, and it's even more efficient.
And the last two layers seem really quite amazing to me, and it takes you to soul memory, soul essence, and I believe if I read it right, you kind of get into a place where you can connect with your inner guides and your spirit guides. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's really the ultimate intention, the ultimate goal. After the emotions and beliefs and survival strategies, that's when we usually will run into our child self. Inner child work really is what it is. And I talk about both aspects of the inner child. There's often a wounded child within us that's in need of some loving, some reparenting, some attention. But we also have an aspect of our child self that I call the wonder child. It's playful, spontaneous, creative, curious, and much closer to our authentic self. It's sort of the intact child self, if you will. And so it's really a beautiful process to reconnect with this inner self that's, well, more spontaneous and playful, that's often full of great wisdom and much closer to our authentic self. Now, sometimes there are other parts that will stand in the way or need some attention. And two of the most common ones are the inner protector. We all have some kind of aspect of our psyche, our personality, that's developed over time to keep us safe so we don't get hurt again. No, I won't let anyone in. I won't go into a relationship because I'm just going to get hurt again. I'll be an aggressor to stay safe, right? Some of these different aspects of personality. And the other big one, or another big one, I should say, is the inner critic. Most of us have a inner critical voice whose intention is really to keep us doing our best, really, to be sure that we excel. But as with a child, if a parent constantly criticizes a child, it erodes their self-esteem and wears them down and starts to build these beliefs that are self-defeating. And so anyone with an inner critic, many of us have them, there's some processes in the book to work with that inner critic so that it can begin to really fulfill its real purpose, which is to keep us on track and have us do our best. I'd like to have it become a more of an inner advocate rather than an inner critic. But the point is that once we get past the child self, we run into different parts or aspects of our psyche that are in play, that have developed over time, that often need some attention or inner dialogue. And then, yes, absolutely. In general, the next step or layer is to reconnect with what I call the wise one within. It can be the wise man, wise woman. It doesn't have to be any gender, although we have both aspects within us. But it's a aspect of our being that is very wise beyond our intellect. And I love seeing someone who's struggling in their life in some way, that's racked their brains, been to other healers or other therapists, become able to reconnect with this inner wisdom that can guide them much more effectively than their own mental mind. I mean, once we connect with the inner wisdom, we use our mind to figure out, well, how am I going to do this, or what am I going to do with this? But just knowing that each and every person that walks through my door and sits in my chair or reads my book has that wisdom within. And I take great delight, satisfaction in sharing the tools I've developed over time to help someone reconnect with that inner wisdom, that wise one within. It's really transformational to not be so dependent on something external, on another person to guide me. I seek guidance from others. I'm not saying that isn't necessary, but the value of knowing that within myself is great wisdom beyond my intellect is not only reassuring, it is inspiring. And knowing how to connect with that and live my life from that place is very, very empowering.
So if we could move on to something else. I was fascinated by your experience when you were struck by lightning and you had that near-death experience.
That was the most transformational experience I've had in this life. I don't recommend it. Some people may attempt that on purpose, but I really don't recommend it. I don't know why, but from an early age, reincarnation made sense to me. The continuity of life, consciousness existing beyond the human body and mind somehow made sense to me. And I don't know why it wasn't part of my spiritual or religious upbringing. But believing in reincarnation or believing in life after death or believing that we have a soul or consciousness surviving the body is one thing. But to see your body there dead on the ground gives you a very different perspective, because no longer is it a belief, but it's something you know, that your consciousness continues, that there is a soul, that there is some part of us that continues even when the body is no longer functional. And so that being struck by lightning and the subsequent near-death experience, it was profoundly transformational for me, as it is for anyone or for most people that have NDEs, because it's no longer a concept, it's no longer a belief, but it's a knowing. And it's not a religious or spiritual belief, it's really a knowing that there's much more to us than this physical body and our mind and our psyche. And so I think just knowing that in some form I continue to exist, is profoundly transformational. And then being free from the limitations of the human physical body and the mental mind is something that's hard to describe, because you can move at will. It's more like consciousness. If you think of being somewhere, you're there. So I didn't know what was happening at the time. I didn't have a roadmap with me, if you will. My physical body was in great pain until I was unconscious there in the street and laying in storm water from this huge storm. But I moved away quickly from the body and went to this place of great light, this place of unconditional love. And again, you can read about unconditional love and you can strive for it. You can hope to experience it. I think it's pretty rare to experience it here on planet Earth. But I experienced complete and limitless, unconditional love. And, reassuring isn't an adequate way to describe it. But it's something I know exists. It's something I know I've experienced. And it's something I feel I still carry some part of in my being. It's having experience that makes me a more loving person, more accepting person, and while free from the body and in spirit, in addition to experiencing unconditional love, I had the experience of becoming whole or becoming one again with all things in this really universal sea of consciousness. And again, it's hard to describe with our limited language and human experience, but I very much had a sense of myself, but absolutely no sense of separation. I didn't feel at all separate from the whole. I felt like I was at the time the whole, even though I could have some consciousness, awareness of me being me. And it felt so healing to be reconnected. I mean, I think that it's one of the human core wounds is feeling separate from or apart from, and to be reunited and whole again was something I never really considered back then, but was a really profound experience for me. And becoming separate from or coming out of that oneness was also something painful, to become, you know, separate from. And but it was a real learning for me to feel separate, become one, and then feel separate again before I came back into my body and back into life on this earth. But during that time of experiencing unconditional love and oneness, some people that have NDEs describe a being, a religious being, a light being, a guide, an angel, communicating with them. And I know that that happens from work I've done with others. I didn't have such a personification, didn't have a sense of a being standing in front of me. But there was definitely communication from this consciousness that did a few things. One was sort of brief life review. Some people have them in great detail. I didn't. But there was definitely a review of all the individuals whose lives I'd touched doing the work that I'd been doing for most of my life, and feeling the appreciation from all those who I assisted in some way. That was profoundly, what was it? Inspiring and moving. And then I heard a few messages that were especially personal and meaningful for me, that I've really spent my life since then working on. And you know, one of the messages was, you have a really good mind, but you depend way too much on it. You need to open your heart. You need to listen. Listen to your heart, listen to your soul, and listen to spirit. And so that's something I took to heart. And that's in part what the book is based on as well, is listening to something more than other people, or listening to something more than my mental mind, listening to my heart, listening to my soul, listening to my guides, listening to spirit. And my hope is that through reading Essential Healing, that more people will become able to do that and be guided in that way. And that will bring great transformation to our struggling planet and human life.
Hello listeners, this is Simon. Now, as some of you know, I have a diploma in clinical hypnotherapy, and I'm certified in past life regression therapy. And in the past few weeks, I've taken many clients through some amazing and healing past life regressions. And I conduct sessions over Zoom, and I've had clients from many countries around the world. Now, when you go through a past life regression, you will feel totally in control and remember everything. And also, I record the whole session and send you an MP3 afterwards. And this gives you space to relax and go with the flow, knowing that you can listen back later and analyze what you experienced if you need to. So if you ever wanted to explore your past lives in a single session, or have an issue you want to work on, you can go to my website at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk and book a free 20-minute consultation. And at the moment, I'm offering a 25% discount to everyone that has signed up to the Patreon campaign. The link is in the show notes. You went on then to, as you say, you relived the lightning strike through somatic healing. Can you tell us how that works? Because it seems like it was some kind of hypnosis maybe, and it slowed down time.
I use hypnosis and hypnotic regression to take people back to trauma and process it. A colleague used a somatic regression, which really means focusing on the feelings in the body and then going through those feelings back to the event to process it. So he did a somatic regression for me, because I mean, for 6 months after the lightning strike, I really struggled in many ways with profound short-term memory loss, with various fears about anything electrical. It was hard for me to function. I had some physical problems as a result of the electrocution. You know, lightning's over 100 million volts, and lightning can do some serious damage. It melted the wiring system in my car. It melted the wiring system in my body, in a way. And so the somatic healing, or the somatic regression, really took me back to a few moments before the lightning strike, when I was putting my young son in the car, in the car seat, and then going around to the back of the car to load up the beach chairs and cooler, because we were at an outdoor swim meet. It was a sunny day. You know, the storm was on its way, but didn't really know. And then lightning, as I now understand, can strike before the storm really comes, travel up to 7 miles, apparently, which it did in that case. So hit a tree, came through a pipe, ran through my body, melted the wiring in the car, went off the front of the car and knocked another person down. And I was taken off to the hospital. There's some missing time there. Not sure how long. I guess about 10 minutes. And as I said, it was dry and sunny when I was shocked by the lightning. When I regained consciousness, I was in a foot of water, and there was hailstorm and torrential downpour and really strong winds that was blowing trees down and telephone lines down. And half paralyzed, really, after that. Sorry, ask me the question again. I forget what the question was.
I was just wondering, what is the process of somatic healing? It seems like you get regressed back to that point and you relive it. And even though the actual event lasted a short amount of time, you spend an hour or more going through that few seconds of experience.
Well, that's right. And so on a human level, it was a short amount of time, right? 10 minutes, perhaps. But once you're out of body and in spirit, well, there's a couple of things that happen. Most people report a kind of slowing down of time. So as I was being electrocuted, there I was standing in the street convulsing, but having enough time to think various things, like, where is this electricity coming from? If this continues, I'm surely going to die. I should be insulated because I'm wearing rubber sandals. This shouldn't be happening. A number of things like that. But it was all slow motion until I was free from my body. So time, once you're in spirit, is no longer linear. There's not a lot of correlation to how we count time here and how time is counted in spirit. But the somatic regression took me back to a few moments before the lightning strike, and then it took me through that slowly to do primarily two things. One was to release the trauma from the electrocution that was stored in my body. I mean, I fought with all my being to try to push that out of my body. I was unsuccessful. It passed through me, of course, but in the resistance, there was a lot of trauma that was stuck in my body that was causing some of the after effects, some of the other symptoms I was having for months. And so the intention, like we talked about in the emotional layer in essential healing, is to not just find it, but to find a safe way to release it. And so person conducting the somatic regression helped me release the stored trauma in my body. So it wasn't just having a conscious awareness of what happened, but it was actual release of that energy, fear, pain, from my body that was causing some of the chronic pain that I was having. And it was during that I actually then recovered the memories of being out of my body and going back into spirit and experiencing the things I was speaking of, unconditional love, oneness, and having and getting those spiritual messages. And it was once I was back in my body and had a conscious awareness of what had gone on that I began to really, recover from the lightning strike. I had much less pain and my health improved. My memory improved as well. It took time. It wasn't instantaneous, but it did improve. But I also, from that moment, really began to wonder if there wasn't some way I could conduct a session for someone to have the same kind of profound awakening, the same kind of profound transformation, without going through that terrible pain, without all the trauma. And I tried a number of different things, and one of them was past life regression, as I speak about in the book. I was working in a pain clinic, working with people with chronic illness and chronic pain, especially fibromyalgia. And instead of, I began, hypnosis is a really effective method of anesthetizing pain. It can be used for childbirth or some medical procedures as well, or chronic pain as well. But I was having, I would say limited results with people with chronic pain. I'd see them get better and then get worse again and come back for more sessions. And that was really unacceptable for me. So I began doing something different, having them explore the pain that was coming up, even dialogue with it, and then release it. And I saw much, much better results. But in the course of having them focus on the pain in their body, the emotional pain or physical, there were a number of occasions where someone spontaneously regressed into a past life. Now, I had read about past life. I'd heard stories about it. I was curious about it, but I wasn't trained in it. My jury wasn't in for me. I wasn't sure about what it was that was actually happening to someone. But in one of the first cases, a patient that had chronic shoulder pain, 7 years. She'd been diagnosed with every itis that you could possibly imagine, and treated in so many different ways, including painkillers, steroids, anti-inflammatory drugs, physical therapy, immobilization, and nothing really had helped much. And last option was really to do some exploratory surgery, and she wasn't so up for doing that, and ended up in my office. And as I took her into hypnosis and had her focus on the shoulder pain and began a dialogue with it, she began to tell this fantastic story of being in the kitchen of as a slave, and being caught by the master for as she was stealing bread for her son. He didn't have enough food, and so she's trying to get food for her son. He caught her and beat her to death, stomping on her and crushing her shoulder. I did my best to facilitate that session, although I didn't really know exactly what to do or what it was she was talking about. She obviously wasn't a slave in this line. She was a school teacher. We finished the session, and I brought her out, and essentially she just told the story. I didn't really even do a release or a forgiveness or any kind of intervention that we normally do in past life regression. And she was pain-free from that day on. And as she said to me, "Mom, my arm doesn't hurt anymore," I thought, well, what was that? Was it a fantasy? Was it her imagination? Was it somebody that was psychologically unstable? I didn't know. Was it past life? I didn't know. She just certainly wasn't part of her belief system or framework. She was just as shocked or surprised as I was. And we agreed that she would come back in a couple of weeks, and
we would continue. And she did. She came back about 2 or 3 weeks later and was still completely pain-free. And as far as I know, to this day, still is. She actually was proudly told me she was back on the bowling team. She loved to bowl, and she hadn't been able to do it for a long time because of the shoulder pain, and she was bowling again. So I didn't know what box to put that experience in. I just made it a big question mark. And it happened a couple of more times with other people. And I said, no, there's got to be something to this. And then trained and learned how to do regression therapy, whether it be to childhood, to in utero, to the womb, or past life, or into spirit. Visit any of those places, and you don't often know where you're going. I mean, someone comes in with a certain condition, you may regress back to the origins of it, and it may be in their childhood, it may be in utero, it may be past life. So it's unpredictable in a way, but I think one of the greatest frustrations for most of us doing therapeutic work is being able to find the origins of these things, because honestly, they don't all come from this life. They can come from before birth, and they can come from previous life. The soul can bring it into the body, and you can do all the psychoanalysis you want, and you're not going to find it because it doesn't, I mean, it's carried in the body, but the source is not the mental mind or even the human body that impression or the past life imprint is that's carrying it.
So you went in and then got really interested in past life regression, and you learned how to do life between lives as well. So did you do a lot of training for that?
Yes. Yeah. And you know, it really took years of practice to hone that skill, or those skills. And conducting past life regression, at first I kept it separate from the medical practice because it still seemed pretty far out there, and I still wasn't so sure about it. So I had a separate office and times where I did that work until I got more experience with it. And then, you know, part of my quest after my lightning strike, as I said, was to find a way to help facilitate a session that could parallel what happened to me with in my near-death experience without the trauma. And somehow past life regression seemed close, but there was still something missing. And then in 2001, I was invited to assist at the first training that Dr. Michael Newton was doing in Virginia Beach of the life between life regression work that he'd been researching for over 30 years. He worked with about 7,000 patients before he published his work on it. And so I went down there just to attend this training and to assist at it. And he did the one and only live demonstration of a life between life regression. This is a very deep, very profound sessions. And understandably, most people wouldn't want other people observing them. But because this was a training, someone had volunteered to do that, and he conducted the session. I said, no, he found the way. And what he was doing was he started off as a family therapist and then began using hypnosis to augment that work. And in a similar way to Brian Weiss and myself, had some people spontaneously regress into past life and then began to learn how to facilitate that. But he'd taken it a step further, and what he was doing was at the death scene where the individual would die in the past life, the soul would look back over that life, and that's where a lot of the learning and healing comes from, is reviewing that life from a higher perspective when you're not stuck in it. And he found how to move someone from that review of that life into spirit, well, not really move them, but follow them into spirit, where he spent years kind of mapping the spirit world, if you will, of what, you know, these 7,000 patients, what they had in common, what they reported in common, meeting guides, having life review, going for what he called restoration or healing, visiting a library that was full of wisdom, some people call it Akashic records, meeting other souls that they were closely connected with and having communication with them, even with ones who were still living, some unincarnated part of their soul being present and being able to connect with them free of their ego and limiting mind. And I said, no, he really figured it out. And so I completed that training, and it was years of practicing before I felt I was really very efficient, very good at it. But that's been my main focus and practice for many, many years now. And I've spent much of that time also training other therapists, other facilitators to do both past life and life between life regression. So I train them both in hypnosis and past life and life between lives. And I think that it's really some of the most rewarding work that there is, because you move someone beyond their ego mind and body and limited beliefs and begin to re-experience themselves as the divine being, as the spiritual being that they are, and reconnect them not only with their own soul essence, but with their guides and loved ones in spirit too, that are there to help and support. So I find it both challenging and most rewarding of all the work that I do. And it's fascinating because I learn something in each and every session that I conduct. And I see the changes it brings into people's lives, the awakening that happens from it. And so, yeah, that's really work that I love.
And when you take someone through a life between lives regression, you say in the book that it can take 7 to 8 hours and it's spread over 2 days. So it seems like it's very intense, and you probably go into a lot of detail there.
So these sessions aren't that long. All together, preparing for them and conducting them and reviewing them, perhaps. But really, I usually do dedicate 2 days for it. The first day is the past life regression. That's 2.5 to 3 hours. 2.5 is usually adequate. That includes the talking about what we're going to do and why, and what the person most hopes to get from it, explaining the process, how it all works, conducting the regression, going back through childhood, womb, and past life, and then doing the life review, and then bringing them out. And people don't forget what happens, but I like to review the highlights with them so that it's clear what the main lessons are, and where the healing is, and what the learning is. And then on the second meeting, we would do the life between life regression. And in general, that's about 4 hours. Sometimes they're a bit shorter, and sometimes they're longer, but rarely longer than four. And so the 4 hours is much the same. It's really going, I have people prepare questions, things they want to ask their guides, or topics that they want to explore during the sessions. And I also have them prepare a list of the significant people who are or who have been in their life. And they can be living or past. And I have them write their name and relationship, and then something brief about their nature or character. I like to see who's in the person's life, you know, so I have a better idea of what's going on. And then we'll conduct the session. We go again on the second day through childhood and womb and past life. And we often see great healing from the work we've done in the previous session. And then from the death scene in the past life, moving them into spirit. The order varies, but most often they'll meet a guide or a loved one, often go through some kind of healing, and then have their questions answered, either by their guides or certain experiences there. And then after that session, I'll review it. Of course, we record it, and I send the recordings, because there's often so much valuable healing and information in the session that it's really good for them to have a record of it to review and then include in their daily life somehow.
So there are different stages to the life between lives sessions. Does everybody always go to every stage, or does it depend on the client?
No, not necessarily. I mean, this is a big world and an even bigger universe. And so there are some primary or major experiences that most have in a life between life regression. But I would say that the real focus is what it is that they've come in most wanting to know. So a common question is, well, what's my soul's purpose? That's a big question, right? And so in a lifetime, we have certain lessons, things we're wanting to learn and things we're wanting to accomplish. But over lifetimes, from a higher perspective, the soul is working on developing certain aspects of its character and wanting to achieve certain things, whether they're personal development or accomplishing something in the world. And so in the life between lives, there might be a life review where lifetimes would be looked at and you can see the soul would see the progress that they're making. Or that can happen in a different way too. Sometimes a guide will sit with the person and talk about it and review these things. Sometimes the soul that's recently arrived into spirit meets with a guide or guides and then is actually taken through various experiences from previous lives to help them remember what they experienced and what they learned and how they behaved and then review to see the progress that they're making. All this is done in a very loving way, you know, the kind of judgment and punishment stuff that we learn from various philosophies. I've never seen in the couple thousand sessions that I've conducted. Sometimes someone will at first be concerned or afraid that they're going to be judged or punished, but it's not something I've ever seen in these sessions. It's really done lovingly. If there's punishment, it's usually self-inflicted, not coming from spirit or from guides.
That's what we hear about the near-death experience, isn't it? Where people do the taken through the life review, it always seems to be there's no judgment but how you judge yourself.
Exactly. Well, and that's what one thing I love about this is that there are so many parallels from these two different fields, the near-death experiencer stories as well as the life between life regression stories. There are many, many parallels, as there should be, but I think it really helps them prove out. You know, a couple of years ago, I had the opportunity to work with a cardiologist in Canada who gathered 20 of his sudden cardiac arrest patients. I didn't know there was a difference between heart attack and cardiac arrest, but cardiac arrest patients were all resuscitated. They were all dead. They were all, for some period of time, I think the shortest we had was a couple of minutes. He actually had cardiac arrest at the hospital when he was arriving for some tests. And the longest was someone who was dead for over an hour. She was with a group of physicians and nurses on a wilderness camping trip. And so they were able to do mouth-to-mouth and chest compressions to keep her circulation going, keep air in her system so that she didn't have brain damage from it. But every one of the 20 that I did hypnotic regression for back to their near-death time, back to when their heart and brain were no longer functioning, reported many of the very same things. This was a pilot study with only 20 people. And before COVID hit, we were working on funding for a second bigger study. But that slowed everything down because there were other priorities. But we'll go back to that and do a bigger group of 50. And it's so interesting to hear someone that doesn't have an especially spiritual or religious upbringing talk about hovering over their body, watching paramedics work on them, trying to get that body to respond. And some of the comments they make, they're able to repeat much of the conversations that go on between the EMTs or doctors while they're in coma after the resuscitation. There's a consciousness there that's that continues. And you know, these are all people that were resuscitated, right? And so they can tell you about the procedures that were done on their body. They can tell you about the ambulance ride. Again, it seems like it slows down. Some of them talk about it being almost silent when the ambulance is screaming, going very slow, even though they're speeding to get this person to the hospital. Many of them talk about going into the light, and they've all been resuscitated, and so they only went so far. They all seem to reach a kind of a threshold where they get a message or a loved one appears and says, no, it's not your time, you have to go back, and talks to them about why they need to go back, what it is they need to accomplish or work on, do. And unfortunately for many, once they're resuscitated, both as a result of the combination of drugs they're used on them, but also coming back into the body and going through all the trauma and back into having to deal with the mental mind, they forget why they came back. They know something, they have a sense that something profound has happened, but they don't necessarily have any conscious memory of what it was, just like me. And so there's great value, I believe, in doing hypnotic regression, NDE regression, for someone who's had a near-death experience or had an extended period of unconsciousness or coma, to explore what it is that happened in that dead time, to explore what it is that happened when their brain and heart weren't functioning.
So part of the process with life between lives or past life regression, you talk about hypnotically regressing someone back to their life in the womb. You tell us what is the purpose of this? Because in the book, you talk about some amazing things.
You have conscious memory, right? You remember what happened yesterday. And then you have subconscious memory. This is deeper memory that's stored in the subconscious mind. Rational conscious mind doesn't have enough space to store everything, so it's stored in deeper memory. Hypnosis is one of the tools that can be used to access the beliefs and the memories that are stored in the subconscious mind. It helps bridge conscious and subconscious so that subconscious memories flow into conscious mind and the person can report them to you. So you can regress someone back to something they've consciously forgotten, but there's that hard drive there in the subconscious mind where it's all stored. But you can go further than that. You can regret, so those memories from conscious mind and then subconscious mind are stored in the body and subconscious mind, but you can go further and you can go into the womb. No one has much conscious memory of what's going on in there, understandably, because the brain isn't fully developed, the human body's not fully developed, the psyche's certainly not fully developed, conscious mind's not fully developed. But if you think about what's happening during gestation, is you have this human body that's developing, but you have the soul that's coming into it. And there's no set day or time that soul comes and boom, it's in the body. It's a much more fluid situation where the soul energy is merging with the body, and that takes time. And so one of the values of exploring that in utero time is that you're going beyond conscious and subconscious memory, you're going into soul memory. And so you can explore a number of things. One is something I find fascinating, is that the soul has its personality, if you will. It has its characteristics, and the body-mind has its characteristics, and they can be quite different. And so it's here in utero where you can start to understand, oh, that's where this imbalance or this conflict or this compatibility come from, is the soul came to do this, and the body is designed to do this, and they're integrated and working to accomplish that together in some way. I think one of the things that most people come in to see me for is is, why am I here? You know, what's this life about? What am I to accomplish and learn? And in the womb, with the soul coming in and not yet fully joined with the body, not yet fully having this amnesia, a person can often easily recall, number one, how they feel about coming to be born, because there are certainly those more enthusiastic souls that are coming hoping to experience certain things or achieve certain things, and they're excited about it. You have more reluctant souls that are like, oh, I know I have to do this, but it's not going to be a really easy one. Or, why do I really have to do this? And so it's a place where you can explore how the soul feels about coming, but also what it is it's coming in this time to do and to learn and work on. Why is it choosing this body? Why is it choosing this family? Why is it choosing this country or this location? Why is it choosing certain situations that are going to be in the life to come? These things are not all predetermined, but they're prepared for, they're discussed. I look at them as possibilities. So it's not necessarily the soul says, I want this, 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 and this to happen. But the soul will say, well, I really want to learn about being more compassionate, or I want to learn about being more self-loving, or I want to learn about fairness, or I want to learn about unfairness. And then certain life circumstances will help provide that learning. But if you know, if you go back to into the womb, to that time where you know you're coming to learn and work on these things, it certainly gives your life a very different perspective. It doesn't seem so happenstance. It doesn't seem so unfair. It may still be painful, but at least it gives you a certain perspective, reason, and understanding for it. It gives more reason, not more reason, more purpose for one's life, is to understand what can't be understood by human mind, and going back and remembering, oh, okay, that's really something I wanted to work on. And boy, those parents that were so difficult were the perfect ones to help me learn this, to put me through what they put me through, really helped me get that. And so it gives a different perspective on ourselves and on life as a whole. The other thing we can see in the womb, Simon, is predisposition for certain physical conditions too. If someone comes in to me and they've had lifelong issue with irritable bowel syndrome, they have a lifelong issue with a nervous condition that no one's really been able to find the organic physiological cause for, I'll look for it in the womb. I'll have them scan their developing body and see if there's a propensity for it, if there's I want to know, is it something they're bringing in with them from a previous life? Is it a past life imprint? Is it something that they're absorbing there in the womb? Is it something that's developing there? Or is it something that happened later after the birth? Then we know where to work on it. So we didn't talk about it, but one of the layers in essential healing is what we carry for others, right? It's this ancestral healing that is so missing in the Western world's therapeutic model. But what I see happening in the womb sometimes is you have this baby body developing, you have the soul coming into it, and then we explore, well, you know, how do you feel there in the womb? Oh, I feel so nervous, so anxious, it's so uncomfortable. I just want to get out of here. Well, where's that nervousness, that anxiousness, that discomfort coming from? Is it in your body or is it around you? No, I'm not sure. No, it's all around me. It seems to be coming at me. Where's it coming at you from? It's from mom. She feels really anxious. She's so nervous. There's not enough money and the relationship with dad just isn't any good. She didn't really want to be pregnant. She's not so sure she wants to have a baby. Oh, well, how does that make you feel? Unloved, unwanted, afraid, nervous, anxious. Mm-hmm. So now we know the source of it, and we can work with it. I've worked with many cases of anxiety and anxiety disorders that had very little to do with this life, but actually began in the womb with the developing fetus absorbing the anxiety and fear from mom. And that's not to blame mom, that's just to identify the source of it. And then that gives us opportunity to return it or release it and find a remedy for it. But you need to know where it came from in order to find that remedy in most cases. So there's a lot that can be accomplished in utero regression. And actually, before I studied with Michael Newton, I was doing more of a Brian Weiss methodology where we would induce hypnosis and then go straight back to past life. But I found it to be so much more thorough to go through childhood and then womb and then past life. I mean, not everybody really needs or even wants past life regression, but work through childhood stuff. You know, that's often the place you want to look first anyway. Sometimes people come in for past life regression because they've read a book about it and they're curious or interested. But it's often some childhood stuff that will come up first, kind of has to be worked on in some order. Although there are often layers, you'll find similar issues in childhood and womb and past life because it just wants to be resolved. But if you go back to the past life and resolve it, then you don't need it in this life or in childhood.
This is all such fascinating stuff. So the book is called Essential Healing, and that's on Amazon, isn't it? You get it on Kindle and physical book?
It's in every bookstore. It's on every online book selling platform. Amazon is one of them. Yeah, but it's global, and it's most any bookseller has it.
And I've really enjoyed reading it. So thanks a lot for being a guest on the podcast. It's been fascinating talking to you.
Well, thanks for having me, Simon.
And that was an interview with Paul Orand about his book, Essential Healing, Hypnotherapy and Regression-Based Practices to Release the Emotional Pain and Trauma Keeping You Stuck. A great way to support the podcast is to sign up on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/pastlivespodcast or click on the button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. This is the free 1-hour version of the episode. The extended episode is 1 hour and 22 minutes. If you join the $2 a month tier, you get an extended episode every month. If you join the $5 a month tier, you will have access to an extended episode every week and the back catalogue of extended episodes, and there are currently 33. Also, if you're a patron, you get a 25% discount when you book a past life regression session with me. And there is a Past Lives Podcast Facebook group, and if you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And I'd like to say that coming in January, I will have a new podcast out. It's called the Alien UFO Podcast, and it'll be on all the apps as soon as I can get them there. And if you enjoy the podcast, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.